Fugitive. A QM production.
Raven hair, ruby lips, sparks fly from her fingertips. Voices in the night. She's a restless spirit on an endless flight.
Ooh, witchy woman, see how high she flies. Ooh, witchy woman, she got the moon in her eyes.
Right, and we are on for a special Halloween edition of Talkin' Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby and Ken, and occasionally even a little bit of myself. I thought it was very nice of us to schedule Halloween this year so it would fall on a broadcast night, especially for the hosts of the program. If you want to join in the discussion, it's 800-407-KSAV, or you can email during the program talk@ksav.org, and I will be on duty here to receive that. I want to tell the audience that we have been experiencing some what's known as in the trade as technical difficulties. So if there's problems tonight, why please be patient. The good news is we're doing the best we can, and the bad news is the best we can do ain't very good. So we'll continue on from there, and I to start things off here with the special Halloween edition, it will be the head hobgoblin, Bobby Neer. Bob?
Thank you very much, Dave. Yeah. Yes, it is Halloween, a scary time full of frightening things like ghosts and skeletons and spiders and other creepy, crawly things that can come at you out of the darkness. But it is just one night out of an entire year, and if you're lucky, it's full of good things to eat, so nobody really minds. However, if you have the misfortune of being Richard Kimball, every day is Halloween. For him, there are creepy individuals who wish only to do him harm all the time. And it's not just Gerard, but a wide variety of troublemakers. In this Halloween edition of our show, we will look at some of the most memorable characters who make Kimball's life miserable. In the first half of this program, we will discuss some of the witchy women, as we call them, of the series, and in the second half, some of the scariest and most menacing male villains. And we can start out with the second episode of the series and a little girl named Jenny Amory, a troubled child seeking only some attention who does it by fabricating stories and telling lies about people. The most dangerous one being that Richard Kimball tried to molest her when he found her out in the woods one day. Now, I would not personally have called her a witch, but the writer of the story did, since that's the title of this episode, The Witch. Of course, she is rather creepy. She's a little girl who talks like a 35-year-old woman, and she keeps a doll underwater in the local pond with a rope tied around its neck so she can lift it out and talk to it. Kitty and Ken, what about this kid, a witch or just plain dysfunctional?
Well, I always thought calling her a witch was a little extreme because, you know, lots of kids, I mean, I don't know of any little girls out there who have never talked to their dolls. The only thing that really makes it bizarre is that they've got Jenny keeping the doll in the pond with a rope tied around her neck. I mean, that is very strange, but I still wouldn't go so far as to call her a witch because there's nothing in the story to suggest that Jenny is into the occult. She's just a kid that's disturbed and has a very overactive imagination and you know, tells lies to try to get herself out of trouble.
Ken?
She's a little creepy to me. I wouldn't want to be around her. I also thought her mother was a little strange, too. But as far as that episode, I did not like it at all. And to start off the series that way, I was very disappointed. You know, that's the second episode of the series, and they focus on that little girl and the problems with Kimball, and Kimball has to, he's running away, and eventually, it's so silly, Kimball is in the water, or in the lake, and he's trying to hide from the mob, and then he's talking to the girl. It's just a very, very strange story, but Yeah,
but then he ends up helping her because she realizes that by telling lies, she can, you know, she realizes that telling lies can have extreme ramifications. She realized that she could have gotten this guy killed.
Remember, though, that at the end of the story, she ends up running to him.
Yeah.
She ends up in his arms at the end of the story.
Yeah, precisely.
It is a very bizarre story for the second story of the series because it makes it look like that's what the series is going to be about, that this guy is going to go to these small backwoods towns and meet these kind of people, and it doesn't really fit.
Although he did meet other strange people in backwoods towns.
Yeah, but it's a very odd choice for a second episode.
But
I still wonder often about their timing in the series. It's very bizarre. But she is a very creepy kind of strange little child, but she's obviously, you know, just wants a lot of attention. So I don't really know why the writer called it the witch, because other than, I mean, it is rather strange that she's keeping a doll underwater, but a lot of kids do that. They, you know, they have imaginary friends and things like that, so I don't really know that it's all that
unusual. And lots of kids have their own little secret hiding places.
Yeah, by today's standards, some of the kids keep their playmates underwater.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so after that, we get to one of my most hated episodes of the entire series, Ticket to Alaska, with Richard Kimball going to Alaska to find work for some bizarre reason that I don't understand at all. And this entire episode just makes me sick. I hate the entire thing, even talking about it tonight. But the person to pick out this episode is a woman named Adrienne Banning. Only because she ends up being the guilty party. There's a lot of women on the boat that aren't any good. She just happens to be the one that ends up killing an investigator that comes on the boat. I don't remember a whole lot about the episode, to tell you the truth. It's hard for me to talk about it. Maybe you can refresh my memory, Kitty. Isn't she an embezzler along with her husband? Isn't that what their crime is on the boat?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, and to tell you the truth, I don't remember a lot about that episode either. I just remember that the episode played out like a really bad episode of Diagnosis Murder.
Yeah. And she's overacts and she's also overdressed in the entire episode. For a woman on a boat, she's just wearing all kinds of fancy gowns. It's just ridiculous.
If the theme of our program tonight is the scary women or the scary villains or whatever, I don't think she's that scary on the boat. So,
I don't know whether she's scared. Well, I didn't really pick these women because they were scary. Those are more the male villains in the second half of the show.
Yeah.
Just that they're troublemakers, and she's one of them.
Oh, yeah, and she's definitely a witchy woman. That would,
those lyrics would fit
her definitely.
But I wouldn't put her in the top five.
She's rather boring. No, I agree. She's rather boring.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily put her there anyway. But these women that I picked for this list are simply troublemakers. They make a lot of trouble for Richard Kimball indirectly, not always directly, but indirectly. And that's true of the third person on this list, Ginny Roland in the episode Last Tightrope, the wife of a department store owner. And when he accidentally kills a friend of his when they have a fight, and a vagrant comes along to steal a bottle of a dead man and gets accused of the crime, she finds out about it. And she's perfectly willing to let an innocent man go to his death for a crime he didn't commit simply because she's afraid that she'll lose her social standing in the community. She's pretty horrible, too. I mean, this is another one of these women that are indirectly make Kimball's life more dangerous because he's got to almost testify because he's the one who saw who really did it. Right, Kitty?
Right, and actually, I find this woman definitely is a witchy woman because, you know, I also found her to be very amoral because I believe, wasn't it also established that she was having an affair with this guy that the Leslie Nielsen character accidentally killed?
He had said to her husband, he says, what you don't realize is that we've been having an affair all along.
Yeah, and so here it is, her husband kills the guy she's having an affair with, her lover, and she just kind of shrugs her shoulders over the whole thing. She doesn't seem to care that he's dead.
Right.
And, I mean, the only person, you know, Ginny Roland seems to care about is truly herself. I mean, this is definitely a woman who just looks out for number one.
Right.
I agree that, you know, women who don't care about anybody but themselves, they need to be classified as witchy, you know, because in the series, we see a lot of women who go out of their way to help Kimball, but in this episode, she could care less about anybody but herself.
Okay, let's move on, because the time is short, to a woman named Carol Willard. She's in Garden House, and she's the woman who is not only having an affair with her sister's husband, but actually is plotting to kill her sister so she can steal her inheritance. Of course, she gets her comeuppance at the end of the episode when she gets shot and Kimball leaves her dying on the floor. Right, Kitty?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is all about family values, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You get siblings on this show doing all kinds of strange things to each other. But yeah, I mean, without a doubt, this woman qualifies because, you know, she's more than willing to let, you know, her sister's husband kill her sister. Although, in the end, you know, like you said, she does get her comeuppance when she very stupidly goes running into the garden house, you know, where the guy thinks that it's his wife that comes running in, and so he shoots her. You know, and I remember thinking when I watched that, it's like, what an idiot. Why would you go running in where you know the guy is waiting for a gun, and you don't even yell, hey, it's me, don't shoot?
Ken?
That was a horrible episode, Garden House. I think many of the members on the message board gave that low rating. And the problem with that episode, yeah, the Carol Willard is just conniving, and the whole episode is just... kind of like a soap opera, and then she dies in the end. You know, I had no sympathy for her at all. She was on the ground at the end. I said, who cares?
True. Okay, after that, we've got Dorena Pruitt from The Home Company, another one of my most hated episodes. this one takes place in the South on a plantation or somewhere, and this is full of hammy acting and a ridiculous storyline. Dorena simply wants to take her new stepdaughter and send her back to the insane asylum where she just got out of, so she also can steal her inheritance.
Yeah, that episode was not real great. Dorena definitely would be classified as a witch. You know, I really found absolutely nothing to like about her. I mean, I found myself wondering what the husband even saw in her in the first place, because it's very obvious that she... you know, that she is very self-serving, and that, you know, it's apparent to me that, you know, she didn't really care that much about her husband. All she was interested in was his money and the social standing.
Right.
Yeah, Garden House and Homecoming are both soap operas. I could care less what happens, and the women, yeah, you can't identify with them. You
know? How many of these women's pictures do you have on the wall of any that you've mentioned so far, Ken?
None of them.
Oh, none? Oh,
but
okay.
The next one that Bob has on here, I totally disagree, Bob. What's
going right.
on
well,
with
the last one, we have Sophie from Somebody to Remember. And when I put Sophie on this list, Ken got all excited, and he said, no, she's too hot to be on this list. And I agree. And on our website, I have written Sophie, in that bombshell, whose plot to steal her boyfriend's life savings stands directly in the way of a plan to make Gerard believe that Kimball has left the country for good. Yes, she's very hot and very sexy, but she's also very deadly because she's out to steal money and nothing else. And Carol, that's about her boyfriend who's got a fatal illness. And I don't care how hot and sexy she is, she's still horrible.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, not only... My opinion of her when I first saw her was that she's just plain mean, you know, for absolutely no reason. And I'm still trying to figure out why she and the guy were supposedly dating, because he didn't even seem like he was that interested in her. I mean, it's like, this is his girlfriend, he doesn't even seem that interested in her, and she's not interested in him, so why are they even hanging around together?
I think the problem here is Ken probably has her picture on the wall.
Not yet, but I'm thinking about it.
All right. Does that give everybody a chance to comment on this one? Hot and sexy here?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Then let us take a brief time out, and this will give you a chance to go out and open the fresh bag of candy or whatever in the heck you've got out there for tonight. We will come back with part two of Section 1 on a special Halloween edition. Was it the Witchy Women edition of Talking right. Fugitive on Retro Radio? On the women in the first part of the program, don't worry, now they're going to beat up on the men. So for, what is it, Halloween villains, the male, these would be, but you're not witches, but warlocks. So now we turn to warlocks. Bob, you go right ahead.
Okay, Dave, before I get started, I just want to give out a couple of thanks here. One to Lee, who runs our Talking Fugitive website. She did a great job on this webpage for this show. She's got all kinds of animation on there. And she always does a good job. She did a particularly good job on this one. So it's still there. It'll probably be there for a couple of days, and then it'll be in the archives for anybody who wants to see it. And thank you, Dave, for getting the Eagles to come on the show tonight and provide a little theme music.
My speciality.
It's probably your legendary career in radio that convinced him to come here tonight. Okay, so now we need to do the scariest male villains. Now, there are tons of male villains in the series. Some, however, really stand out, and particularly in this series. And here again, we start at the beginning with the pilot episode with one of the very worst you could ever hope not to meet, and that's Ed Wells, wife abuser, hardcore criminal, bully, everything you can imagine, in Fear in a Desert City, wonderfully played by, this is a great performance by Brian Keith, a couple of years before he totally changed his personality and became Uncle Bill in Family Affair. He's in this, and he's about as mean as can be. Can't even talk to anybody. Clenches his teeth, talks to his teeth. If you look at his wife, he wants to kill you. Kitty, this is one of the most dangerous men in the entire series.
Oh, I firmly agree. You know, you can't ask for a more menacing guy for poor Richard Kimball to come upon when he's, you know, when he's first started on the run. Although it kind of sets things in motion. It's a sign to Richard Kimball that he's going to meet a lot of other psychos like this, but not too many. But I would definitely classify Ed as a psycho. I mean, this guy is beating up his wife. He tries to beat up Kimball, and at the end, he tries to pull a gun on Kimball and shoot him. You know, but then of course he gets shot by the police. But without a doubt, he's definitely, you know, one of the top five scariest guys we've seen on the show.
Ken?
Yeah, I would rate him the number one villain probably in the entire series. If you really watch that episode, which I have five times, and I would not want to be around him, and especially since he's rich, he's smart, he's conniving, and if you were with him in a dark alley, I mean, I would be scared. And
he's,
you know,
even got the cops in his back pocket.
Yeah, but you know, his performance, I think in season one, the members of our group rated him the best male performance.
Right.
So he was good.
Yeah, you couldn't even, the problem with a criminal like that, you can't even talk to him. Second on the list is my personal favorite, and that's Miles from See Hollywood and Die. Here's a true psycho, one of the most dangerous people you could ever want to meet. he is the worst kind of murderer. He's a thrill killer. He doesn't kill for money or for jealousy or for anything. He kills because he simply thinks it's fun. This is another great performance, and Miles is incredibly scary. I mean, I can honestly say that I'm going to get scared when I watch this episode. Miles, if you got Miles in front of you, he's pointing a gun at you, you may well die.
Oh, I firmly agree. You know, at the end, boy, when he wants to shoot Joanne at the end, and he's going to enjoy every second of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely a guy who kills for thrills. You know, he's definitely another one of the top, definitely one I'd rate in the top five.
Ken?
Yeah, he was very good. That was a good episode. I thought it was well done. A little flat ending, though. I didn't like the ending of that one. But he's a villain, and he's out of control. And when they're young like that, anything can snap him. In fact, a couple times in the car, I got the feeling he was going to do something really bizarre and crazy. So, yeah, definitely.
Well, he actually takes the gun, and he points it at everybody, and he goes, pow, pow, pow,
yeah,
as if he's going to pull the trigger. And we're going to do a show, a radio show, on this episode probably sometime in the new year, in January, because it's really worth doing. But the Miles is incredibly scary, no matter what he's doing. There's another scene in there, of course, where he's outside the car, and he's got Kimball and the other hostage in there, and he puts his face up against the window and leers at them. It's just a very, very creepy performance, one of the scariest. From there, we go to a man named Bellows. I don't believe they ever give his first name in this episode. In the episode, Come Watch Me Die, Bellows is accused of committing a mass murder, and he's being taken to his day of justice by a bunch of, well, they're really kind of vigilantes, and they're taking him, and he's a lot like Richard Kimball in the fact that he claims that he didn't do anything. An interesting episode. I rather like this episode because it forces Kimball to see what the other people think when he's claiming that he's innocent. Bellows, throughout this episode, claims he did nothing of the kind, that they're going to hang him or put him in the electric chair, whatever's going to be here, unfairly. And this is a really unusual episode because for one of the rare times in the series, Richard Kimball ends up being wrong. They never show Kimball as being wrong. He's always right. He always does the right thing. He's always got his finger on exactly who's guilty, except in this episode, because it just so happens that Bellows did indeed kill all of those people. Right, Kitty?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And actually, if I was going to do the scariest villain that I've seen on the show, I have to cast my vote for Bellows. You know, I was thinking earlier today, is it Miles or is it Bellows? And I was thinking it was kind of a tie. But I lean more towards Bellows because Bellows strikes me as, like, someone who's like a serial killer. You know, someone who, you know, serial killers are, you know, many times they're, you know, they're just ordinary looking guys. They claim they don't do anything. They lull the victims into a false sense of security. I mean, anybody who ever listened to some of the interviews that Ted Bundy gave of how he lulled women, you know, into places where he could overpower them and then later kill them. Bellows, to me, fits that type of a personality, and he truly, you know, not only is he killing for thrills, but unlike Miles, I mean, this guy seems like someone who actually does it full-blown with premeditation. He picks the victim, he plans it out, and goes from there. You know, and it was, I thought it was brilliant how he hoodwinked Kimball.
Ken?
Yeah, that was a good casting by the producers of the series. What was the guy's name again? I forgot his real name.
Robert Doyle.
Yes, he was excellent. He was kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde character. In the beginning of the episode, he's very calm, innocent, and then he turns into Mr. Hyde, or, you know, or he turns into the Jekyll character, and he is, remember the kitchen scene with the scissors?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that was good.
Okay, after that, we get to a rather bizarre episode, and a guy named Joe Aleph, who just happens to be an old army buddy of Kimball's, and it turns out that he supposedly saved Kimball's life during the Korean War, I believe, by falling on a hand grenade. The trouble is, he ended up with a very disfigured face. They find each other again. I don't remember how exactly. Oh, something having to do with kids being a skating rink, right? And everything's fine except that he's gone a little off the deep end, and he now blames Kimball for the way he looks, and he simply wants to kill him. A very unusual situation, right?
Well, yeah, it is. Although I never got the impression that he wanted to kill Kimball. I thought he wanted to disfigure Kimball the way he was.
Yeah, but at the end, didn't he brought out the guns and he tried to, at the very end, try to kill him.
That's true. Yeah, Joe Halep, for me, just seemed like a real disturbed person. I guess I didn't really find him to be as scary as these other guys. I found him just more disturbing. I really questioned. I remember my big criticism of that. I was questioning why the Lee Grant character was keeping a guy around that kept a live grenade in the house. And it was obvious that he had hit her kid, that he was abusive towards her kid. And, he's scary, but I think he's more scary on a disturbing scale than just scary, scary.
Yeah. All right, let me, Ken, give me a second here. Let me just run through these last two people, and then I'll get back to you, because I'm afraid we may run out of time. After that, we've got Sheriff Joe Bob Sims. In an episode called Nicest Fellow You'd Ever Want to Meet. Everybody hated this episode because it is so sadistic and so unpleasant a story. And Pat Hingle, who was so memorable in season one's Search in a Windy City, which we'll also be covering in a few months, kind of trashes that character and plays a totally sadistic sheriff here who not only catches criminals but becomes one himself. This is a very unpleasant story, to put it mildly. I didn't like it. I don't think anybody liked it.
Yeah,
but it's just sadistic. I mean, he's sadistic in it, and the story itself is sadistic.
Yeah, and actually, I thought the story was kind of stupid to boot. You know?
A waste of time, I agree, that one. Nicest fellow you ever want to meet.
And the last person on our list is a guy named Neil Pinkerton, in the story titled APB. And Neil Pinkerton is also a career criminal who's killed a lot of people. We don't know how many, but he's unusual. He's different than other killers in this series because he's so articulate and he's very quiet. He's got a very quiet demeanor. You'd never guess what his occupation is. And he has several conversations with Kimball that are fascinating because he's got a reason for every murder he committed and claims that all the people he killed actually deserved it.
Yeah, yeah, and he's another one that I would classify in the serial killer range, you know, and I would say he's definitely just as scary and disturbing as the Bellows character.
Yeah.
And
to a certain
degree even more because he actually rationalizes what he does as well.
Yeah, I would not want to be in an alley with him either. He did a very good job that episode. Was kind of creepy to me, and those are the kind of villains that you got to watch out for because you don't know what they're thinking. These other guys, you know, they're very obvious, but guys like this guy, you have no idea when he's going to strike.
That's right, and he commits a murder in this episode, and you really don't expect it because when he's speaking, he doesn't seem to be that way. Well, one thing I want to point out about all of these episodes that we talked about before we run out of time
the time has run out here now. The music is going.
You'll have to wait for the book to come out. Right.
What we want to find out in the next edition is who Ken would like to spend time in that dark alley with, because there's sure a lot of ones he doesn't. Hey, good job for tonight. You guys will return in 2 weeks to talk some more Fugitive. I hope all of you in the audience will be here as well. Stay tuned for Getting to Know You with Susan McRae. Tonight, we're going to be discussing Buffy the Vampire Slayer on Talk and Television. And after that, all that jazz. So, folks, stick around here on KSAV, Terravision Radio.